Welcome to year two of the Funding Love podcast. I'm Mallory Elrod.
And I'm Caitlin Duckworth. We are two adoptive moms that seek to love, support, and elevate all corners of the adoption triad, including adoptive families, adoptees, and birth parents.
We do that through honest conversation with both expert and everyday voices about all things adoption and more, all while running our nonprofit, Funding Love.
We create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people.
We are Funding Love.
The podcast.
Hey guys, it's your co-host Kate. Thank you for joining us today for episode 96 of the Funding Love podcast. Today, we have Muthani Gashiko with us. Oh my goodness, I hope I didn't mess up her name too much. Anyways, she is a birth mom to her beautiful daughter, and she also parents two boys. She is so sweet to join us, and we are so grateful for her vulnerability on this episode. She talks with us about the importance of education in regards to transracial adoption, and she also shares with us what was really important and life-changing for her in her journey as a birth mom post-placement. I know y'all are going to love her. Thanks for tuning in. Let's take a listen.
Welcome back to the Funding Love podcast. Muthani, it is so nice to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. So, Muthani, share with our listeners a little bit of your story and how you are connected to the adoption community, because we have mutual friends. We were talking before we hit record mm-hmm. that our worlds are kind of colliding through mutual friends. So tell us right. how you're connected to the adoption community.
Yeah. So I am a birth mother. I placed my daughter in November of 2016. So she just turned 7 a couple months ago, which is wild. I feel like it's flown by. But so we're in an open adoption. They live pretty locally in the area. And so we get to see each other a couple times a year. Our relationship is kind of developed and expanded over the last, you know, few years as we've gotten to know each other better. And, you know, And so she's also a transracial adoptee. Okay. Both her parents are white and she's biracial.
Got it.
So that's also another aspect of our story. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I feel like that's how open adoption is. It kind of ebbs and flows right there.
Right.
As you grow and as you get to know each other, and as life happens, it's mm-hmm. sometimes closer, sometimes more distant. I feel right. like that's kind of how it is. So what would you say post-placement support? Because we're big on that here. That's what Funding Love is. We do a lot of that's what we are, post-placement support,
right?
Care, yep. love, right? So mm-hmm. how has that been for you as a birth mom? What does that look like in your last 7 years?
Yeah. So a big part of it has just been the community of women I've met along the way of birth right. moms, you know, who I can, you know, we share that same, our stories are different, but we have that same bond. And so it's, you know, these are women who I can call up when I'm having a hard time and just yeah. have someone who gets it. Therapy has been huge. I had never been to therapy before placing. It's something I'd considered, but I just was like, sure, one day. And it actually wasn't even until 2 years post, placement that my post-adoption case recorder finally was like, okay, yeah. girl, time. What you doing? It's time.
Yeah.
So I'm super thankful that she checked in with me constantly, over those 2 years until I finally kind of broke down. I was like, okay, fine. I'll go to therapy, get it over with. And it's been life-changing, obviously.
Well, to have somebody like coming for you, mm-hmm. honestly, because they know mm-hmm. what you're going through, to say, hey, listen, I'm going to keep coming back right. to you until you say yes. Now, is that somebody through the agency?
Yes. So this is through the agency.
That is, I don't feel like I hear that often, mm-hmm. especially 2 years post-placement that she's still right. saying, hey, that's, yeah. well, that's, that is huge.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
huge. In the community that you say with the other birth moms that you found, is that something that you sought out yourself, or was that organic as you were in therapy, or was that a big next step for you to say, okay, I'm going to find somebody like me?
So that kind of organically happened. So actually within those 2 years before I started therapy, I was very very involved in sharing my story and doing panels and just woohoo, go adoption, yeah. go birth moms. And so I was kind of just in that fog of not accepting the heaviness of it and just kind of being more this is happy, this is great. And so through that, I met, you know, towards moms. And I remember like meeting some that were, you know, a little further along and were had a more holistic view of what it is to be a birth mom. And I remember hearing some of the stories and being like, oh, that's never going to be me. I'm never going to have, you know, negative feelings or hard feelings about adoption, you know? And so it's kind of funny now. And I'm like, okay.
That did hit me. Yeah. I guess that just comes with experience though. You know, like right. those, mm-hmm. they've gone through the whole, I guess,
right.
call it the grief roller coaster or.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Wow. And then also Instagram, like most of my like really close birth mom friends I met on Instagram, like, yeah. and so like Ashley Mitchell, you know, she's in yeah. Utah, I'm in Texas, like, you know, no way we were going to meet just, you know,
right.
And,
yeah.
And so, and it wasn't until like 4 years after we like met in person or met on Instagram that we actually met in person. And so it's kind of crazy.
She's captivating though. There, you know, she'll yeah. draw you in. She's awesome. Yeah. She's mm-hmm. been on our podcast. And then Jesse Matos, yes. is the one that connected us with you, and she's been on our podcast and has been on our Funding Love trip and is
yep.
such a great voice in that community as well. But, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yes. so in addition to your daughter that you placed, you parent yes. two boys. Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
So how is that? Cause I've had conversations with other birth moms before mm-hmm. that once they became pregnant and had a child that they parented, a whole new wave of emotions came over them that they didn't mm-hmm. expect, almost like ripping off the Band-Aid of what you felt before. So right. How has that been for you parenting after placement? And I mean, the healing, and has it been hard? Walk us through that.
Mm-hmm. So my husband has a son who's 11 from his previous marriage. Mm-hmm. And so I have a bonus son. So obviously I became a, birth mom first and then step-parent second, step-mom second, yeah. and then a parent third. but, you know, that even before we had our now shared son together, who's two, it was hard because I feel like it was hard to know my place, right? Mm-hmm. And so with not being the primary parent, it's hard to know, like, okay, where do I fit in the story? Right. Which is very similar to, you know, even as a birth mom, sometimes it's hard to know where do I fit in, you know? Right. And then with our baby, our toddler, mm-hmm. You know, when I was pregnant with him, it was hard. Like, I feel like I didn't anticipate to feel unhappy about being pregnant and guilty. I felt like I wasn't, like, I had no right to have joy in this season because I had said no the first time. You know, I said no to parenting the first time. And so what gave me the right to embrace this pregnancy this time around? So it was very, very, very hard. I'm thankful that I was able to, I had a really good like community around me kind of encouraging me and telling me, like, you know, right. it's okay to feel this way, but it's not true. Like, you know, you are worthy of, you are a mom, first of all, and you are worthy of having this child and being joyful in this season. And, you know, towards the end, once, you know, I knew he was coming, I was able to kind of start to connect. And then once he was here, it was like just instant connection. Like which I did not expect. I thought I was going to have a really hard time just with the connection, but like mm-hmm. he's been my best friend from the beginning. And so that was, you know, very sweet, but also kind of hard too at times because like the drive home from the hospital was, I just bawled the whole time because yeah. I wasn't leaving empty handed, you know?
Right.
I was leaving with a baby in my hands and like,
wow,
what?
I probably felt odd, weird, and like took you through this worthy question,
right?
Like you were saying. But you know, isn't it crazy the power of like just the body keeps the score?
I was thinking
the same thing when you were pregnant, for you to feel like you were unworthy of that, the shame that you carried, the guilt,
yes,
and the no joy around it, because
yes,
that likely, I don't want to speak for you, but mm-hmm. the confusion you had when you were pregnant the first time,
right?
So your body's just like, here we are, let's do it again. And it, yep. That's not.
You have to coach yourself to how the circumstances are different and it's not.
Yeah. Fair. Yes. Yes.
So I can only imagine like that drive home and the layers of feeling of like so much mm-hmm. joy and yeah. so much grief. And then yep. so much, it had to have been
the joy
like,
again.
Yes. Yeah. No, literally, it was like yeah. just a whole roller coaster, like the whole drive. And even when we got home, my husband was like, just go lay down.
Yeah.
Because I just like, it was a lot, you know, it's a yeah. lot to carry. And since then, it's been really interesting to see kind of, because obviously, he has a big sister and yeah. That's been a really cool thing to watch with how much she loves him. Like she's obsessed. Like she literally like now when we FaceTime, it's like she could care less about me. She's like, where's Jabari? You know?
Yeah.
So which is sweet, but also, you know, again, there's that extra layer of like, dang, you know, in another timeline, they could be growing up together. You know, like,
you know what, girl? And what ifs can kill you.
Oh yeah.
The what ifs will kill you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to go. You don't like, I feel like getting trapped in that mindset is just like so dangerous, right?
It's so dangerous. It is.
Definitely mm-hmm. is.
But I think it's so cool to see that they will grow up knowing each other. They are still siblings. They will still have a bond that is a sibling bond. So that is, that is so special.
And I'm so thankful that, you know, her parents are so intentional about cultivating that relationship. Like it's like it's really they know and see the importance of her having, you know, that connection to her biology. And so it's
not even just the sibling biology, but like the transracial part of it that I feel like culturally will be so important for her to see you know, as you raise your son for her to be a part of that culture too.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So helping parents to navigate transracial adoption is something that you told us that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
So tell us more about that, because you said that you actually help to educate and support adoptive families that are parenting children of a different race. I think that is so important and something that needs to be talked about, needs to be coached on. So tell us your role in that. And
So, I mean, mostly, like, I'm no expert. I just kind of speak from my, you know, lived experiences. And like, I know there's other, like, you know, adult adoptees and such who do this more. I can't think of what word, but like they probably do a better job than I would do. But I just kind of share from my.
I mean, they might do it professionally.
And like, that's the word. I could not think of that word.
But listen, everyone's experience is stories.
And I think for me, the passion for me comes from the fact that when I was going through the, when I was expecting with my daughter and, you know, choosing families and whatnot, that is not something that was emphasized to me that I needed to think about and I needed to consider and I needed to have in a family that I choose. In fact, my support system at the time kind of discouraged me and they kind of were like, oh, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, you know. And I was the place that the state of mind that I was in at that time, I kind of was like, oh, okay, sure. So now, you know, 7 years down the road, now that I've grown and learned so much and like, and seen to like how my daughter's parents have put in the work, like, this is not something I looked for, you know, when I chose them or asked of them when I chose them, but they were already doing it and continuing even now. And so anytime I speak like on a panel or talk to like adoption professionals, that's something I just always emphasize. It's like, y'all need to be making sure your children, or even if they're maybe a prospective adoptive parents, like start now, you know, you need to have the diversity in your life. Now you need to be reading the books, watching the shows.
And
being, in the community.
If you're not comfortable with it, then don't do it.
With yourself.
Yeah, be honest with yourself. If you feel like this is something you can't uphold or maintain.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because I feel like a lot of times there's this, oh, we want a child so bad, we don't care. But you need to care. Because
that will be your child. And then
because that will be your child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there will be long-term effects if they are not surrounded mm-hmm. by people who look like them or people who, you know, they can relate to. And so.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what tips would you give? Like if you were to give one tip right now to a listener that's an adoptive parent that maybe is really early in the adoption process or they've been placed with a child of a different race than them, like what's a tip that they could do today to like help themselves be more educated and do better by their child in a transracial adoption?
Yeah. So I always say seek out if you're not already in a diverse community or have diverse family or friends, seek that out. One, why not? But also sometimes you just live somewhere where they're just not there. So then maybe move. Which might sound like a harsh thing to say, but like, I don't know what to tell you.
Or go to like a different school or go to a different church. Or go to a different, that you would have surrounded with that culture and diversity.
Right. Yeah. And so that's the biggest thing. The other is listen to like adult transracial adoptees who, like there's Lydia Faye, there's Tori, I can't think of her last name now.
Oh, Tori Peterson.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Wreckage and Wonder? Is that her last name?
No. No, but Tori Hope Peterson does speak about that stuff too, though. Do you know Tori Hope?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I don't think I know Tori. Yeah. Okay.
But honestly, you're right, though. Just take to Instagram and you will find a lot of adopt. Yes.
Yep. Yes. Therapy Redeemed, Cam. Like, he's incredible.
Yes. I follow him too.
Yeah. And so there's resources out there that you just need to find them and do the work, put in the effort, because this is a life in your hands that you need to be a good steward towards. And so,
So awesome. And I know that it can feel scary for adoptive parents, but honestly,
for sure. Absolutely.
Honestly, it really grows you and it can really be fun and exciting and really add a lot of depth and beauty to your own life just by exploring different cultures or different lifestyles and different types of people than you would normally be drawn to hanging out with. And so I think that it's also shifting your mindset into like, this isn't scary. This is going to grow us all. It's not just for my child, but it's for me too.
Right.
To grow as a person.
And it's shifting the perspective of when you go into the adoption journey of like, check box, I got a child. Thanks. Done.
Yeah. Right.
It's taking it deeper of saying, so this child is coming to my family. What? Mm-hmm. Where are they coming from? So it's also honoring their first families and their birth families,
right?
And knowing it's so much more than just it's like Mal, you're saying,
yes,
whole shift in perspective that you have to look at
right
it eternally, almost. You know, like
right, not just, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And I think that parenthood is one of those things where, you know, the years are short, but the days are long. And we think of their childhood as this like big thing, but they're not going to be children forever.
No.
And so you can't parent them as if they'll be children forever. You have to parent them with the lens of like, this is going to be an adult in the world. And what are they going to need? Like, what is a piece of them that I need to help them to learn more about and experience and embrace so that when they go out in the world, they have that, you know, in their figurative backpack that's going to help them to be the adult that they're meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good. Oh, that is so good.
I love that.
For anybody who's a parent to look at it that way. We know that you also help write post-placement curriculum for birth moms, and you do that with our friend Ashley Mitchell. Is that correct? Through her niece?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Awesome. So tell us about that. Like, what is your role in writing that curriculum? Do you have a focus?
Yeah. So we meet once a year, usually in the fall, and we'll write the curriculum for the next year. Uh-huh. We kind of do it as a team, but then each person has a specific like project. I'm typically in charge of the music because I'm musical gal. In the past couple years, I've put together the playlist that matches up with each month's topics. So it's just kind of like spend hours just listening to music and like kind of figuring out what.
So there's a playlist that goes along with each lesson.
Yeah.
That is awesome. No way. Oh my gosh. It's like a Christmas playlist. What every left idea. Has there. I know. Mm-hmm. Oh, so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's heavy work, you know, while we're writing and really having to, you know, write from a place of just our, one of our biggest traumas, you know? And so, but knowing that this could be, this is life-saving material that we are curating. Because for a lot of women, you know, this might be the only post-placement support that they're getting. They may not have a community of birth mom friends, you know, like others do. And so this is maybe their once a month where they can find that support. And so, yeah, so it's, I'm super thankful for the work that we're doing.
So you have to rip off your Band-Aid to get to that place in order to write here. Right. So that's a heavy weekend or a heavy season.
Yeah.
For y'all to write. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we've met some birth moms over the years at our Funding Love trips who have never met another birth mom for like 10 years, 12 years post-placement. So they're in this alone season for like a decade, which I could not imagine. But I would love to know what you would say to maybe one of those birth moms listening right now who hasn't reached out for support, is nervous to reach out, doesn't know where to start to reach out. What would you encourage them?
One, I would tell them, you know, you are not alone. You are important. Your story is important. And I'm sorry that, you know, this is part of your story, but, support is so important. And I think again, with like Instagram or social media, that's a great place to find support. I don't know if we're going to drop my handle or anything, but I welcome DMs.
Great.
You know, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone, there's any mamas out there that are like, they don't know where to start or just want a listening ear, like I'm here. And so, yeah.
That's it. Community. Find
your community. Yeah. Sometimes it's a lot of, you know, easier said than done, but it's,
so what would you say is like that hurdle, like to maybe give somebody comfort to know that they are not alone in that, taking that first step and that fear for taking that first step? So like, if you could talk us through, like, what is that? That's like the block.
I think the block might be not wanting to face the grief and face the heat and the healing, because before you heal, you have to hurt. And so, I think maybe being around other people who have gone through the same thing could be is probably triggering. And especially if you haven't already started healing. And so I can see why that would be kind of be like, I don't know. I think I'm good. I think I'm okay to be by myself, you know?
Yeah.
But we're, you know, stronger when we're together, as cliche as that sounds. I am a firm believer is just come as you are and, you know, bring all the mess, like you are loved anyway. And so just make that first step, you know?
Yeah, it breaks my heart to think like, there could be other women out there like 10, 20, 30 years post-placement who have never, felt that like safe place with other women who like, I've been there, I've done that. So it is just my hope that if you are listening, that you know that on the other side, there is comfort.
Yes,
that there is friendship, there is a sisterhood, there is those women that will wrap you up and say,
"Yep,
cry with me." You know,
yep.
It really does. It breaks my heart. Like I could cry about it just to think how alone that must feel.
Yeah,
and you know,
community can be a place too that it's, you can come fully as you are. It doesn't have to be a piece that you have to set to the side or certain people don't know about. Like, or you know, it. I think that's one of the coolest things that we get to witness at our Funding Love vacations is watching a group of women that haven't met each other just already had like the elephants out of the room. Like it doesn't matter. You can be completely who you are because there's nothing there that, and they all share that common thread, regardless of where they live or where they've come from or what their stories were like. There's still that just thread that kind of ties them together. And it's so cool to see what happens when you have that type of community.
Yeah. And I, if I can, I will share another resource, yes, that I'm like, duh. So there's a resource called The Table. It's led by, two of my really good friends, Katie and Lacey, and they do host a once a month support group. It's via Zoom. So you can be like, they have people in Canada. They have like mamas in Canada who like Zoom, join it, and they are amazing. They lead it very well, and it's very chill, and it's, come as you are. And so if anyone's listening that wants a first step, that would be a good first step at the table.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. Mm-hmm. And there's also, like, if you're in the Orlando area, I know that our friend Jesse is a part, yep, of this pizza night that, mm-hmm, they do. I don't know if it's once a month or once a quarter or whatever it is, but, mm-hmm, it's a very casual meetup. No, yeah, agenda, nothing, just sit and eat pizza. So there's so many things depending on where you live.
Right.
And I love that you're going to let us share your handle, because I feel like you have a community that, even if maybe you can't speak their language, or, mm-hmm, you can give them resources,
right?
Give them to a, yeah, friend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much for being so open. And I know this is, you know, sometimes hard to dig back in to, mm-hmm, those feelings,
sure,
but we are grateful, because I do know there are people listening who will truly benefit from your story and you sharing here today. So, mm-hmm, so thank you. But before we wrap up, we like to end every Funding Love podcast episode with a little extra love. So,
yay,
share with us one thing in life that you are loving right now, like a book, a song, whatever it is, a habit, yeah, a hobby. Tell us what you are loving.
So right now I am loving the gym that I go to.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's Burn Boot Camp. And I have never been like a super like gym girly or anything, but, sure, like I joined last April and I fell in love. Like, it's,
love it.
So it's like it's my 45 minutes a day where I can, it's just me time, and, yeah, I can just do my thing. And I love it so much that I work there now. So I'm there
no
like
way.
4 days a week.
That's
so, yeah,
great.
Yeah.
That, so, is awesome.
So I'm, hey, what, loving
that's
it.
That's a good yeah, habit and thing to love right,
yeah,
now. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that's awesome. Well, once again, thank you for joining us on the Funding Love podcast. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this episode of the Funding Love podcast. We'll see y'all
next week. Thank you for having me, y'all.
Oh, girl, you're so welcome.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Funding Love podcast. We are a crowdfunded nonprofit, which means that people like you can help make a lasting impact in the lives of adoptive families and birth moms. At Funding Love, we create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people. And when you partner with us, whether that is giving online, signing up to become a monthly donor, or simply buying merchandise from our shop, you are Funding Love.